curb appeal that lasts. Shop Labor Day Extra Big Deals at Lowe's. For a limited time, get 50% off all Holland pavers. Plus, save $110 on the Ego Power Plus 56-volt, 2.5-amp-hour blower trimmer combo kit. Now just $249. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's. In-store and online. Valid through 9/7. While supplies last. Selection varies by location. Holland pavers offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back to Pod in the Tyne Match Day. My name's Taylor Payne, and it's Premier League action at St James's Park as Newcastle take on perennial bogey team Bournemouth, hoping to build on a solid start of the new season. Chris and George are on the ground for us today, and George has also been chatting to the new captain of the Lasses, Rachel McLaughlin. You can hear that towards the end of this episode.
So from 2-0 down against bogey team Bournemouth, Newcastle have fought back to 2-2. It's a draw. They probably just about deserve it, maybe just about, to keep their unbeaten start to 26-27 going. How are you feeling, Christopher? Are you glass half full? Are you glass half empty? Have you destroyed the glass? Have you thrown the glass onto the pitch? You were so disgusted about how bad Newcastle were at the start. Or are you quaffing from it in a delirious, drunken state?
I'd say I'm none of those.
It was a very strange question.
It was a very strange question. I'd say I'm just very much glass fully in the middle, whether that's
glass fully in the middle. Yes.
It's not half full or half empty, it's just fully in the middle.
Right in the middle.
Yeah, very much right in the middle. That there are a lot of aspects of it which feel unsustainable for Newcastle at the moment, conceding far too many shots, not creating enough clear-cut opportunities, particularly from open play. But then there are also signs for optimism, the fact that Newcastle, who dropped 27 points from winning position last season and only claimed 3 points from behind in a single game when they beat Leeds, have managed to fight back from 2 goals down and basically through sheer force of will as much as anything else, find a way to get a draw when they only had 2 shots on target. So, yeah, it's a very much a mixed bag. You actually use the term mixed feelings after the game, and I think that perfectly sums up what we saw there.
Well, indeed. And in fact, if we're struggling with, mainly because of my stupid question, but if we're struggling with this, let's get a third opinion. I went into the mix zone afterwards. I talked to Jacob Ramsey, who obviously scored Newcastle's equalising goal. And I asked that question about, were they feeling positive, negative, somewhere in between? And this is what he had to say. I then talked to him too about that idea of leadership and momentum.
What do you take out of a game like that? Is there sort of irritation with how it started? Is there satisfaction with how it ended? Is there a bit of both?
A bit of both, I think. I think this time last season, we'd probably lose that game. We'd probably equalise and then they score late on. I think there's been so many games last season where we can see late goals. So yeah, that's a big improvement. Obviously, the first half probably wasn't where we've shown it in the previous 2 games. But that's just part of football. I thought in the second half that I'd started really well. Great finish by Barnsley in the first half. But another game, unbeaten.
One of the things that was kind of asked about this team, this squad, was after losing some really big players this summer, whether there would be enough leadership, enough character in the team. Have you answered a few of those questions today, Mandy?
Yeah, 100%. Don't want to get too carried away. It's already our third game. But I think since pre-season, some of the boys have stepped up. Obviously, we're missing 2 big players in terms of leadership and character in Bernie and Big Joe. But some of the lads are stepping up.
And how important was it just to keep this positive momentum going from the start of the season.
Yeah, 100%. I think if you look at the manager on the touchline, he's full of energy, full of positivity, and that just reflects onto the players, especially with these type of fans that we have here at St James's. Their energy's electric.
I thought that was sort of vaguely interesting, that question about leadership. It has been something that we've been wondering about. Obviously, Newcastle have sold big players over the summer. Matthias Jaxler talked about a leadership vacuum not too long ago. Dan Byrne is out at the moment. Joe Linton is out at the moment. Would they have the character to turn a game their way if things weren't going with them? And it was also something that you asked Matthias Jaxler about. So let's have a listen to that too.
Yes, definitely. I explained to you here a couple of weeks ago already that if there's a vacuum, that other lads need to step in. And also with them, we need to be patient, because if young lads stepping in new roles, yeah, maybe there's a match day where they can refill that on 100%. But there are also match days where they need to improve, where they struggle maybe a bit. And we're here to support them, to encourage them in this path.
Yeah, and I think like much of what is happening with the Newcastle side at the moment, this Newcastle squad, Jaxler basically is saying that it's to a degree a work in progress, and that there's going to be some matches where you do see those players step forward and it work positively, but in other matches they're still learning to accept these rules, particularly young players in certain positions. But I definitely felt that's what happened. I mean, some people may talk about Harvey Barnes' performance in general and say that for most of the game he didn't really positively affect the match, but he steps up with the key moment. He shows leadership to have what turned out to be a match-defining moment. If Newcastle hadn't scored almost immediately after Bournemouth had gone 2-0 ahead, I think that the game could have got nervy. It could have even got away from them, but it gave both the players and the crowd, I think, belief that they could fight back into the game. And so that's a form of leadership. He's not someone who shouts and bawls necessarily, but he provides that form of leadership to a certain degree. You could even argue off-field you had Jaxler managing to get a yellow card, which he wasn't very happy about afterwards, but that he shows that leadership because he's fighting for every decision on the touchline and he's speaking so much with his players. And then Jacob Ramsey comes on, someone we haven't seen really enough of and hasn't produced those big moments, and gets the equaliser later on. So people stepping up in those moments. I don't think that you necessarily look out on the field and think that the players who were there today are natural sort of Churchillian captains in that regard. Then they're not going to give rousing speeches, but in some of their actions I think they're starting to step forward and people are trying to take responsibility, which is what was required.
Yeah, I totally agree. I look at that game and I think, you know, obviously before the match there's a lot of positivity. Newcastle had a really good end to the window. They've had a very good start to the season, and you know, perhaps expectations were a bit inflated, but that's okay. We all like getting carried away. And then it starts and Bournemouth are really, really good. I mean, they're just really good. They look much more of a team, a settled team. They look like the kind of team Newcastle want to be, I would say. Aggressive and pressing high and full of running and just, you know, defending quickly, getting back quickly. But you have to sort of also deal with what you're given. And I think you have to take encouragement for the way Newcastle responded. Like a criticism I've given about Nick Waltimada in pods over the last couple of weeks, I sort of say you have to impact a game. If it's not going your way, you have to find a way of impacting the game. And I think that holds true for what Newcastle have done today. They could have been dead and buried in that first half. You know, Bournemouth were very good, but Newcastle were terrible. And to have come away from this game with a point and with that momentum still there, I think is really, really positive, with substitutes making an impact, with them getting better as the game is going on instead of sort of getting worse. I think that has to be seen as a positive. So I think I'm glass a little bit more full than middle after that. But yeah, there are a few warning signs.
That's more than half full?
So I think it's more than half full, yeah. I mean, it's sort of weird because I want to drink from the glass. But then...
Well, you stop talking about drinking out of the glass.
But by this analogy, the more you drink from the glass, the emptier the glass gets, and so therefore you feel more negative. Well, surely if you drink from a glass, you're getting kind of drunk, and so you're happier. Don't really understand it.
I think we should just move on.
Just move on. Okay, I mean, so I think we've said, I think that has to go down as a decent point for Newcastle in context.
Yeah, and the fact Newcastle are still unbeaten.
So. And they're still unbeaten. And to get something out of that was really good. But let's flip that around. They were awful at the start. It was a dreadful start by Newcastle.
As it usually is against Bournemouth.
As it usually is. I mean, like wondering whether the Eddie Howe derby would go a different way with a different different manager. No, but let's talk about that start. I mean, what was going on? What was happening?
Well, it was very strange. After 10 minutes, Bournemouth had more than 60% possession. And Newcastle were... I mean, they have this approach where they are... They want to play vertical football. They want to play in transition to a certain degree. But when they got the ball, they gave it away. And Bournemouth just used it pretty well and sort of pushed them back and deep. And then Newcastle seemed determined in the first half to try and play it out from the back and just basically kept on conceding possession in dangerous positions. So they looked ponderous. They looked indecisive. And whereas I think what has brought success for Newcastle against Liverpool and Spurs was that they were very, very good at competing within duels. And particularly in that first half, it just felt like they were second best at just about everything. Bournemouth were more physical, were just more clinical in what they were trying to do across the field. And that really, they could and should have been out of sight. And that would be their shortcoming, that they keep conceding the late goals. But I just thought, yeah, they just looked more sure in what they were trying to do. I felt Newcastle... caught between two stools would be gone a bit far, but I just think that whether they didn't expect Bournemouth to be quite as on it as they were, and whether they were trying to play in a certain way and didn't feel that they could, I'm not entirely sure. But it just looked like a team in that first half. The easy narrative to have offered up would be that although both teams have had changes of head coaches, Marco Rosa has been at Bournemouth since the start of the summer. Yaya only came in a month ago. Newcastle have had a lot of churn of players, whereas Bournemouth have retained Alex Scott, who ran the game in the first half. They've retained Ryan on the right-hand side. They have Marcus Tavernier, who always plays well and always scores against Newcastle, in the team. And whereas Newcastle players still starting to get to know one another. And I thought particularly in midfield, they really struggled first half in the midfield battle, whereas they were really good at Spurs. I thought that between them, Miley and particularly Nico Gonzalez, there was a gap between them and the defence. They were bypassed too easily at certain points. They weren't winning challenges. And that was a bit concerning because this Newcastle side keep conceding shots.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk about that. I mean, it is an astonishing stat. You pointed it out before the game that over the first two league matches, so against Liverpool and then at Tottenham, Newcastle gave up 44 shots. Now, that was more than any other team in the division over that two-game period. The most that they've allowed in a two-game period at the start of the season since 2003-04. And if you want to give that statistic a little bit more context, for the first two games of last season, they gave up 80 shots. Now, like, they started brilliantly, you know, or very, very well against Liverpool and Spurs. So you can sort of see a stat like that and think, well, what does it, you know, what does that really matter? You know, what does it really matter? You started the season really well, got 4 points from those games, who cares? That's then put in a slightly different perspective in this first half against Bournemouth. The first half in particular, when they cut through Newcastle, it felt like there was nothing getting in the way between them and the goal. Newcastle, you know, made it very difficult for themselves, giving the ball away. And suddenly, I think it had climbed up to 13 shots. It was 13 shots for Bournemouth in the first half. They'd obviously scored two goals. And you're thinking, okay, no, this actually feels a bit more systemic.
It's the first time Newcastle conceded that many shots in a league match, I think, for about two and a half, three years. And for the first time, Bournemouth, only the second time I think they've ever done that in a Premier League match.
They've done 14 before, you know, for their entire Premier League things. You know that I'm not a stat guy, but it felt like there was something in this.
I mean, even beyond the stats guy, I'll go back to Newcastle's opening goal of the season, which the phase immediately before Newcastle scored was alarming because Gravenberch just ghosted into behind Newcastle's midfield and then passed the ball in the wrong direction. But that is almost like what Bournemouth are doing at certain points today. It feels like there is a weakness there, even with the changes in midfield, which is going to take time to adjust. But there is just, certainly through the middle, it does feel like you can get at Newcastle. And that is what Bournemouth did, and they just kept on going for that area. And that's where the first goal comes from. And so those statistics eventually are going to come back to bite Newcastle. They're expected goals against over those first two matches, which some people probably won't want to hear that. They conceded two goals. People say, well, that's the actual only stat that matters. But actually, on the balance of chances that Newcastle conceded, they quote unquote should have conceded more than four goals. So they had got away with it to a certain degree, or Yeisler offered up in response to the question being asked about this, said, yeah, but another statistic was in the first two games, we blocked the most amount of shots, so that shows we can prevent it. Which I see as both a positive and a negative, because in one sense, it's like, yes, great, people are putting their bodies on the line, but also the opposition are in a position to have had the shot in the first place. So that to me is a sort of the double-edged sword. But the first goal comes because Newcastle, there is seemingly a foul on halfway, which a lot of people are going to come on the referee in a bit. And so Alanga is fouled inside Bournemouth half, or looks to have been fouled. The referee doesn't give it. Bournemouth switch play to the other side. Eventually, the ball comes into the box and Alex Scott's shot's deflected off Nico Gonzalez. And at the back post, in comes Marcus Tavernier to finish well. Beyond Lucas Hornacek, who hasn't really got a chance of conceding. Now, that was 10 minutes in, and really it had been coming, not that Bournemouth had loads of clear-cut opportunities, but it had been coming on the balance of play. And I think that just showed in so many ways that Marcus Tavernier was running around the back, was getting closer to the ball than Newcastle were, that they reacted quickest to what had gone on. And so, yeah, I am concerned by those statistics, and it's a young side and they're still building, but I think as it feels unsustainable in that regard, particularly when you flip it the other way and Newcastle have had four shots on target in the last two games in the league and scored all four of them as well. Neither of those two statistics, either way you look at it, are sustainable longer term, and so there needs to be improvements both ways.
Agreed. It was one-way traffic. It was pretty dreadful stuff, and Bournemouth could have been out of sight in that first half.
Yeah, well, when I talk about them playing off in the back, Botman plays a terrible ball behind Nico Gonzalez at one point, and Evan Nielsen's through on goal and should just score, but puts it over the bar. That's one example of sloppy play. I thought the two centre backs really struggled in that first half. And Newcastle improved after the break when they just stopped actually trying to play it out from the back, and that was where they were better. But it was concerning because they did look like they could be carved open at just about any opportunity.
Second goal, please.
The second goal, which is. There's an element of misfortune for Newcastle in terms of the way that the ball bounces to them, but basically Newcastle bring it upon themselves. I mean, they should have also been 2-0 up when Scott had a shot from the edge of the area after Bournemouth countered, and it was basically a poor shot, and Hornacek was able to collect it quite comfortably. But the second goal comes because Dedic actually is attacking from right back, and he'd been good early on when the rest of the team had struggled, but he gave the ball away in his own half. It's touched away by Scott. Tavernier skips away from Nico's challenge. Justin Kluivert, who scored a hat-trick at St. James's before, shoots against the post. Hornacek's diving across. The ball bounces off Hornacek, goes to Scott, who's followed up on the left-hand side, and he recenters, and it flicks up massively off Malik Chow and goes in off the opposition post. And at that point, at 2-0, you're thinking, this has the hallmarks of it could be a very, very difficult afternoon for Newcastle.
Yeah, okay, and let's talk about the referee. Obviously, Newcastle responded very quickly at that point, and they really needed to. But let's talk about the referee. You mentioned the officiating. It was one of those days, I think, where St. James's gets irked very early on by a perceived injustice, and that feeling carries on. You'd mentioned the challenge on Alanga leading up to the first goal. There's also the ball went out. We thought it was a Newcastle corner. It wasn't given. It was given as a goal kick. That sort of got people. And then
it probably actually was a goal kick as well.
Yeah, but that got people sort of annoyed and irate and questioning what was happening. And then the ball moves upfield. There's the Alanga challenge. And then Bournemouth scored. And I'm not sure. It's like interesting. I mean, I think it was probably, I would describe it as a sort of soft refereeing performance as opposed to a refereeing performance that just felt sort of criminal all the way through, or like you can point to sort of three, four, however many massive blunders or controversial moments or, you know, terrible tackles or that sort of stuff. It felt like there was a sort of softness to the officiating that did not benefit Newcastle, except in the sense that sense of injustice did get the crowd involved in a performance that was really, really poor. So instead of the crowd being quiet and thinking, what the F is going on, the crowd were involved. And that sense of sort of bad-temperedness probably benefited Newcastle as much as the refereeing performance might not have. Is that fair?
I think eventually, yeah. I mean, it won't come as a surprise to a lot of people, I think, who've listened to these podcasts previously, that I'm quite a contrarian in this regard. And I, unless it's a really, really obvious decision which fundamentally alters the entire direction of the match, I get quite tired of hearing about. I mean, a lot of responses to everything I've put on social media after the game has been about the referee. And I get that, yeah, it wasn't a very good refereeing performance, but could Alanga have been? Could they have blown up for that Alanga challenge in the build up to Bournemouth opener? Yeah, probably they should have done. But then Newcastle don't defend it very well. They don't defend. It's not the referee who's stopping Newcastle losing out on several duels. It's not the referee who's preventing Newcastle from being able to actually pass the ball forward and get forward. And so yes, you can say that his decisions are then stopping play from being as fluent as you would want and breaking the rhythm up. But I didn't think it was a performance whereby it was the referee's fault,
no,
quote unquote, that Newcastle were 2-0 down.
I don't think that's contrarian. I think it's logic. I think you've got a logical. I think you're looking at that through the prism of logicality. I don't know if logicality is logicality a word.
Don't think so.
Should be a word. It's a good word. Like, but you, I think you're looking at that through the prism of logic, and you are right. And I'm the same as you. I get very tired with that sort of, you know, casting blame elsewhere, where Newcastle, the only thing you can do after a game like that is look at yourself. If you're being, you know, if you're being genuine, if you're being serious, is to look at yourself and say the referee was not the primary force behind Newcastle being so inadequate in the first half. But I think there is a but. If you look at football through the prism of pantomime, which I like to do, and emotion and things like that, it did play a part.
It played a role.
And
perversely, it played a role in health.
And it always has to, you know, it is football. It's not supposed to make sense. It should be us against the world. And I think that's sort of built into what happened.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Anyway, Newcastle did not need the referee because Newcastle United had Harvey Barnes. And here I'm going to break the habit of a lifetime and I'm going to describe the Harvey Barnes goal. The reason I'm going to do that is because it was exactly the same as every other Harvey Barnes goal has ever scored ever. So it takes absolutely no skill or talent whatsoever. He's on the left, he gets the ball, he cuts in, he curls the ball with his right foot, and it's a goal. How does he get away with it? How can he do this? I mean, it was beautiful.
But everyone used to say this about Arjen Robben. It's like just everyone used to
say about Salah.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
I sort of don't understand. I mean, it's so telegraphed. Yeisler called it a world-class goal, and it was an incredible finish. It was like a beautiful finish. It curled. It's
an absolute postage stamp.
It's like beautiful. But if you're an opposition team, how do you not know that he's going to do exactly that? It's not like he's ever going to try and beat you on the left-hand side. He cuts inside. He's not the quickest player in the world. He curls.
Sometimes go the other way, and I get what you're saying. But as the opposite. If you're a Bournemouth fan, you're probably thinking, look at that, and say every time you watch Match of the Day and Harvey Barnes scores a goal, it's very similar to that. I think in this circumstance, it had come not long after. It was almost immediately after the restart. So I don't think Bournemouth are fully in position. But also Adam Smith, who was playing at right back, had also rushed forward to try and cut off the ball, I think, which was from Lewis Hall. And so Barnes was up against Tyler Adams, who's a midfielder, and Tyler Adams just sort of stops when he does cut inside, and maybe that's because he's not the person who usually would track him inside. So I think it wasn't so much that he's beaten his fullback and then cut inside. He's actually found himself up against a midfielder, and that's made it even easier, quote-unquote, to do what he does in it. It was a world-class finish in the sense that it's just that there is no chance for the goalkeeper. It's in that way. It dips. It goes in that top corner. And it was exactly as Newcastle needed. As I said earlier in the podcast, I don't think if Barnes or if Newcastle hadn't scored, certainly before half time, I think that the momentum would have been against them. But actually scoring at that moment gave everyone the belief that, particularly second half when they were going down towards the Gallagher, that the game was actually, despite having laboured for 37 minutes or however long it was, that they were still in the match and there was something they could take from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to borrow your parlance, that was a momentum shitter. Newcastle, they needed something, they needed anything, they needed something to cling on to. I think if you go into halftime at 2-0, I think that's probably game over, just because of the way the game was going. But suddenly they had this moment of magic to cling to, and from that, and you know, yeah, it's obviously speaking from the benefit of hindsight, but that felt like that had the potential to be the turning point, and in fact it was. Halftime then comes at a good time, and Newcastle in the second half, without being undeniable or beautiful or convincing particularly, they were a lot more solid. It felt like they'd, okay, like we have to stiffen up at this point. We can't let Bournemouth play through us in the way they were. And they actually got better as the game went on, which I suppose is what you want.
Yeah, and in the second half, I thought that Newcastle forced Bournemouth deeper a bit. I thought that they also, as I said earlier, stopped just trying to play it out from the back. They had people trying to carry it upfield. Wisser, in particular, took on that responsibility. Wasn't quite what he did against Liverpool, but there were still moments where he managed to drag Newcastle forward, and it was from him making one of those runs that Alanga heads on and then Willock heads just beyond the far post and Barnes can't quite get there, which was probably Newcastle's best chance before they then eventually equalise, or there with the best chances before they then eventually equalise. So it was a workmanlike second half performance. Again, they weren't fluid in any way in what they were trying to do moving forward. I didn't think that they really had that much passion shape, and that's so far, I think what we've seen under Yeisler is that Newcastle have looked at their best when they can counter-attack into space and do it quickly, get the ball forward, not too many passes, get in behind the opposition. And they didn't really, Bournemouth didn't allow them to do that, but also Newcastle's execution wasn't good enough to allow them to do that often enough. And so instead, it was they were having to try and create opportunities when Bournemouth had quite a few men behind the ball and the final pass wasn't there, or the decision-making wasn't often there. But generally, Newcastle were a lot better in the second half than they had been in the first half, which isn't saying much in some regards, but at least they started to win duels and they started to get themselves in a position whereby they could threaten the Bournemouth goal.
And if we're talking about positives, which we are, we also have to say that this is another game where substitutes have come on and made a positive impact. Obviously, Jacob Ramsey is the big one because he scores the equaliser. So he came on at in the 63rd minute for Lewis Miley. Mateus Fernandez-Pardo also comes on the 63rd minute for Joe Willock. And Ramsey made a vital impact.
He did, and I thought that he was good generally when he came on, that he was trying to make things happen, he was trying to push Newcastle forward. And the goal itself comes from Dedic, centres deep from the right, and the two centre-backs who'd struggled in the first half are involved. Botman heads it back into the ball, but from the left-hand side of the box in. Then it's headed back by Chow. Barnes shoots, and it's blocked and goes back to Ramsey, who very calmly picks to put the ball low into the bottom right-hand corner through numerous bodies. But he manages to keep it down, and then that brings Newcastle level. And Yeisler spoke afterwards about there being 10 more minutes in the game, Newcastle probably would have gone and won it. And I did think later on that without having really clear-cut chances, they were the team who had the momentum behind them and looked the more dangerous, and Bournemouth were sort of hanging on to the point come the very end of the game. But that was Newcastle's only second shot on target, which again says everything that we're talking about. They might have been better in the second half, but it's not like they were forcing Petrovic to make saves, which is the frustrating bit. But yeah, so Ramsey makes that impact. And we saw Fernandez-Pardo for the first time. Yeisler was, asked about it, and he talked about being sort of exciting for the future because he didn't get loads of opportunity. I think you saw how quick he is and can be, just the way he's running around a bit. And there was a couple of crosses in the box. He won a free kick immediately as soon as he came on. And he came on almost, it was for Willock, and it was almost that number 10 position, but it was almost like Newcastle. It wasn't quite a 4-4-2, but he basically had the license to go where he wanted. I think he moved out left sometimes. He was ahead of Wisser at some point. He was level with Wisser. He dropped deeper. And yeah, it'll be, once he has a bit more training time behind him, once he gets physically fit, it'll be very interesting to see how he fits in. But for him to get that introduction to the crowd as well, it was nice to be able to get him on the pitch.
Absolutely, yeah. Interesting thing Jacob Ramsey said afterwards too was that he'd actually trained most of the week in a number 10 role, then obviously comes on in a slightly deeper position.
In one of the two number six positions.
Yeah, that's right, Chris, yes. And, you know, spoke about his disappointment and not starting in the Premier League. But again, you want that. You want your players who aren't starting to come on with a point to prove, feeling, coming on angry, which I kind of really like. Sean Sturr, we see him again coming on for Nico Gonzalez. Again, you see him coming on wanting to play progressive passes, wanting to get the ball forward. Very encouraging. Jacob Murphy comes on two for Alanga. And then right at the end, we get to see Tino Livramento coming on for Lewis Hall. First time we've seen him.
Since April.
Yeah, first time we've seen him this season. Obviously, having to leave the England World Cup squad. Yeister was asked afterwards about Livramento's fitness, about whether he was now ready to start games. He did give quite a complex and in-depth answer, Chris. Would you like to read it out for us?
I'm trying to remember. Was it no?
Yes, it was just no. Do you know what? I'm just tempted to stop the podcast at a random place. It would be a bit like Yaster's answers. Quite funny. So anyway, it's
well, just on the bench as well, there was also the sight of Nick Pope among the substitutes.
Yes.
Which was interesting because Ewan Jowan ruled his ankle during training, and so Nick Pope, who was available for transfer throughout the summer and ended up staying, was back in the Premier League squad. And if there had been something that happened to Hornchek, or if there is in the next, we don't know how serious Jowan's injury is, but there is now the prospect of Nick Pope actually being back in goal in the not too distant future.
Yeah, and actually, you mentioned that. We've actually gone through pretty much all the substitutes, but if you look at the rest of the bench, Toure, Cher as well, and Bamba, that's what it looks like, a really strong bench, or at least a bench with lots and lots of options. And yeah, just to kind of reiterate that point, having that bench and those players coming on and making the team get better, because he did, he left the team unchanged. It's the first time in 2026 that Newcastle's team has been unchanged for Premier League matches, which is kind of incredible stat. Totally understand why he did it after the Spurs performance. But what do you want? If things aren't going great, you want your players to come on and say, no, look, I should be starting. And so that then makes the team selection very interesting for Leeds United, which is, of course, next Monday. But before then, we have the small matter of Millwall away in the Carabao Cup. You've chickened out, haven't you?
I have chickened out, yeah. It was, it just felt too big a game for me, really, down south. Yeah, too fraught.
So who are we sending to that?
Well, we're sending... Who else would you want in a scrap than Jacob Whitehead?
Yeah, I mean, let's just make this absolutely clear. Not me. We've got the boy Jacob's going to go, so hopefully he enjoys that.
Yeah, apparently he only lives like a 15-20 minute walk away, so
hard man of the East End. Is Millwall in the East End? No,
I think it's
South End. Right, okay, well, I think we're kind of just about to wrap things up here. Thank you for joining us. Also, to remind you one more time that we are back at the Gosforth Civic Theatre in October. So please check out their website for tickets. And we're now going to lead in to an interview with Rachel McLaughlin, as Taylor said at the start. Newcastle United women start their season at home to Wolves at Gateshead on Sunday. She's been named captain. I caught up with her this week. Let's not forget, it's been a summer, absolute whirlwind for the women's team as well. So let's dive into the chat with her. Thank you for joining us and see you next time.
First of all, many, many congratulations. How does it feel to be captain of Newcastle United Women?
Yeah, no, I'm very honoured to be captain. It felt great with Tanya and the girls putting their trust in me. So yeah, just really happy, a very proud moment, especially with it being such a big club. You know, I've really got the girls to thank as well for the way I've came in, and they've made me feel so welcome from the start. So that's really helped me settle into this place as well. So no, just really excited by it all.
Here we are. It's a kind of couple of days before it all kicks off. How are you feeling? What's the mood like around the place?
I think in general, there's just a real good buzz within the team right now. Just an excitement to kind of get started. I think you start getting the itch, especially as pre-season starts coming along, and you know, you're starting to get your fitness, you've got the bonds within the team and stuff. So yeah, I think we've been looking forward to it for a little bit now, and it's really good to put in what we've worked on during pre-season into practice going on Sunday.
What kind of captain are you going to be?
Yeah, I think overall, honestly, mainly it's just having the connection with the girls, looking out for the girls. You know, I want to lead by example, especially on the pitch, but you know, hopefully they can come to me with anything off the pitch as well, and you know, just having that connection and communication between players and staff. So yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is just making sure the girls are always in a good place.
What's the perception from outside of Newcastle? Obviously the takeover's happened, it's like, you know, there's been this sort of injection of professionalism. I mean, mm-hmm. It's been a brilliant story for the team. How is it viewed from outside football, and why is it such a compelling project that people want to join?
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, stripping everything away, Newcastle has a name for itself. You know, it does stand out within other clubs, so that itself is a massive draw within it. Obviously, the investment that's getting put in and the way the girls have been is obviously another draw. So you have all these things that from an outside you're seeing it, and it's building up into such an excitement thing. I think it's honestly just a mixture of all that coming together that is such a draw. I think certainly for myself, you know, Newcastle is always seen as a big club, so that in itself draws people in. But you know, it's about then playing the football on the pitch, and you know, it's starting this season that we really want to strive for.
You've obviously been part of this change this summer, but like 11 new signings, I mean, pretty amazing. It's been a whirlwind mm-hmm. couple of years for the club in terms of new players coming and players going. Are there any concerns at all from your perspective about gelling, about whether it can all come together on the pitch?
Yeah, I think I touched on it a little bit. I think it's a real testament to the coaching staff and the girls that were here previously, because I think they've allowed everyone to come in and settle very easily. I know I felt that within myself, but if you were seeing the team in training sessions now or throughout pre-season, you don't have that feeling of it's a new team and when we're trying to click. I think the girls have done so well to come in, and everyone started straight on the money and really went for it. And I think within that, everyone's just bonded on and off the pitch and is getting on really well. So I've got absolutely zero concerns regarding if people are going to make it work within themselves, because it's really not shown that way.
Where you've played, I'm assuming that there's been a target on your back for the clubs that you played for, and you know that everybody wants to beat you, that kind of thing. That is going to be something that people have to get used to here as well, right?
Yeah, I think so, a little bit. I think the league that we're in is very competitive. I think you're talking about the investment here, but all the clubs are doing the same and striving to improve each year as well. So I think we're probably well aware of that situation, but at the same time, it's also going to come down to what's ahead of you, and right now you've got one game on Sunday, and that's what we need to focus on, and then we'll take on the rest as it comes.
Let's talk a bit about this first game, Wolves. It's mm-hmm. Going to be sort of a new experience for them after what happened to them mm-hmm. Last season. Be your first experience of a league match at Gateshead. You looking forward to it?
I'm certainly looking forward to it. I can't wait to get out on the grass with the girls, especially at the start of the season. You know, it's been amazing having the pre-season that we've had and really gelling with the girls on the pitch and whatnot. But there's obviously a certain different kick to when the season starts. So yeah, there's a real excitement from myself and from the girls, including the coaching staff, to get out there and start the league strong. But yeah, of course, it's a new thing with Wolves and everything like that, that kind of regards that. But even with that, I think the excitement levels are always going to be as high as they possibly can be for the start of a season. So I think that could be any team going out in front of us, and you know, we want to really kick off in the right way.
Sometimes if you talk to people around clubs and teams and you ask about their targets, it's kind of can be a bit, you know, a bit wishy-washy. It's like, to do as best we can. Of course, we've got ambitions, blah, blah, blah. Here, it's just very, very straightforward. It feels very, very black and white. It is target promotion, and everybody seems comfortable saying that out loud.
Yeah, of course. I think we need to be aware of what I kind of have been mentioning, of the fact that there is a very competitive league, and you've got to take every game week by week. So I don't think we're hiding from a situation, but we've also got these internal ambitions that within the club we know what we want to achieve this year, but we're well aware of, you know, the strengths of other teams, and you know, really just focusing on week by week.
Question that I'll kind of love asking and sort of interested in your answer. What do you think Newcastle United will look like this season? Or what do you, as captain, what do you want your Newcastle United team to look like?
I think on a pitch side, I think we really want to be a flowing football team. I think we've worked really hard on every aspect within the game. So I think that for me and for the girls, I'm sure would say the same thing, but just within possession, looking after the ball, making things work, being patient, but also having that sharpness when we are attacking, you know, when we have the feel to go, you know, we want to go, we want to score goals, we want the excitement, we want the fans to be engaged on how we're going to play football. So yeah, I think that's probably our biggest thing right now. Obviously there's different aspects within every game, you're gonna have that, and you know, against different teams you're gonna play differently and whatnot. But I would love for fans to come and be like, oh, that was a real good game of football that we've just watched, and you know, appreciate the play that we're performing with.
Was Tyneside somewhere that you knew about before you moved here? I mean, I know you're not too far away, but
yeah, obviously being Scottish, I was well aware of it being here, and I'd visited a few times. Just for like many little like weekends and stuff, like little holidays. So well aware of like the place being a lovely place to kind of settle and live, which it really has been, which has been
you
nice.
Feel at home.
Yeah, generally it's really nice to be closer. My families are honestly been down like nearly every weekend. Can't get away from them now. but it is really nice having that and having them close. And like I say, I'm probably touching on the same thing, but honestly, with the way the team have been and the coaching staff and the staff surrounding that, make you feel very comfortable very early, which is like an absolute huge thing. And I think I knew a couple of girls here last year and they were saying the same thing. So I think that was like a little intent to come here because I'm quite a people person and I like that. So yeah, absolutely. I think being inside the squad now, I feel so at home, and it's like, honestly, on the outside, having like the beach closer, but you've got the city centre. It's a real nice place. I've really fallen for the place since coming in.
Okay, well, if I can end by saying, make our dreams come true, no pressure.
Yeah, we'll do our absolute best.
Lovely.
I appreciate it.
Thank you again for listening to this Match Day episode. And remember, our midweek shows are now on YouTube. So please like and subscribe the channel. And if you want more Pod on the Tyne on top of our two free shows a week, then go to podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm, where you can subscribe for ad-free listening and additional content. Thanks again to George and Chris, and of course to producer Ollie. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, have a good weekend. We'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.